Welcome to Clay and Iron, and I'm Dr. Bill Deagle, MD, and our special guest today is Dr. Nick Begich, who's an expert on mind enhancement and mind control technologies, HARP, weather modification, and, of course, the environmental issues that are so important as our world is in a very serious state because of the effects of the abuse of technologies. And, of course, Dr. Begich is an amazing educator and teacher, has some remarkable products available through his website, Earth Pulse Press. And we do have those posted up on NutriMedical.com. That's N-U-T-R-I, medical.com. The latest being the Angels Still Play, Don't Play That, this HARP video. And also the new Earth Changes, the Ripple Effect, Alaska Sounds the Alarm. And we want to talk about all these issues tonight and how this is such an important topic. And Dr. Begich is what I consider one of the top experts and lecturers on these issues in the world and has spent many years and many thousands of hours in researching them and, of course, is also very erudite in transmitting that information so people understand it in a non-technical way but grasp the seriousness of the misapplications of these technologies and the proper application of learning and mind enhancement technology. So welcome to the program tonight, Dr. Nick Begich.
Well, thanks. It's good to be with you again, and it's always good to be talking about these topics. I think, you know, they are some of the, at least I consider them some of the most important topics of the day, although I think everyone has issues that certainly rise to the same level of concern. It's, you know, it's really about technologies in the 21st century. When you think about the things that make government strong, countries powerful, corporations powerful, for that matter, it really is the command and control of the highest and best technologies. And then the issue is, how do we use them, and what do we use them for?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's like many things. A scalpel can be used to cut out a tumor or to help heal a wound, or it can be used to cause someone a very serious injury.
Right.
And the same with mind enhancement technologies. If it's nutraceuticals, if it's the use of proper use of anything, it can help the body. But
right.
The misabuse of technologies, including things like sonar, which are damaging our oceans, ELF technologies are used to harass or harm people in, quote, these new non-lethal weapons, they're bad. And the abuse of the world itself, which is a living thing, the Earth, with these advanced ELF technologies of HARP and scalar wave technologies, both sound, electromagnetic, and light, are all extremely dangerous, and they're going to bring the world, as they are very quickly, into a state of final crisis. And give us a bit of information behind these new updates, because, of course, you've written the very seminal books, The Angels Don't Play This HARP,
right?
Some years ago. You've written the Earth Rising 2 book with your cohort, talking about the Earth Rising, the Revolution. Give us a background of some of the books and topics that you've covered in the past. And,
sure.
Of course, those are all available, but why were you pushed to be so passionate about these issues, especially up in Alaska? Alaska is a very good place because when environmental changes occur on the globe, they're more evident in the polar areas up in Alaska than they are in many other places because of things like global warming, the effects on the environment, and, of course, the dangers of inappropriate use of technologies like the HARP is becoming
right.
You know, very, very clear.
Right. You know, in Alaska, you know, in terms of environmentalism, even in the country, the way it's addressed is, you know, almost a misnomer these days. You know, I mean, they tried to politicize the science, and really it's about stewardship. When I think about the environment, it's you know, this place sustains us, and we need a balanced approach to how we utilize the Earth's resources. And what's happened with technology is it's advancing so fast. I mean, technology from the invention of the wheel to where we are today will double in 10 months. And as a consequence of that speed, there's not a lot of time for reflection, you know, thinking about what these things are going to do. So we've got an opportunity to do some really remarkable things. At the same time, maybe it runs a little too fast on occasion. And within democratic republics, you know, the control of governments really rests with the people. So I think, you know, getting involved in these issues for me has always been one of, well, if these are the most important issues and they're technical, then let's make sure we contact and report with the best research we can find, condense it down so we can talk about the issues. And the ones we've covered in the past are certainly the HARP issue here in Alaska. We've covered the underwater sonars, their effect on the seas, cell phones and their effect on health. And, you know, we started reporting on health effects on cell phones back in the late 90s when the literature first started to really appear. And, you know, and time has proven, you know, that there are, you know, serious concerns and confirming studies in the years since. When you get
And it's not a minor thing. People need to grasp that electromagnetic pollution, if anything, and we have a world now that's poisoned with depleted uranium, heavy metals, and volatile chemicals.
Right.
But believe it or not, electromagnetic and scalar pollution is more serious by an order of magnitude than all of these combined.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, when you think about all of these compounds and chemicals that have been placed in our environment, the interactions of those with electromagnetic field changes are even, you know, those effects can be amplified. So you're seeing even more increased changes. You know, here in Alaska, in terms of climate, just in the last 40 years, we've lost 40% of our glacial ice. You know, that's, you know, I've watched it happen. I've lived here and grew up and was born here and watched this change take place in this region, which is profound. I mean, when we think about Alaska, it really does, in terms of the environment, all of the Arctic regions sound the alarm. There's a recent story that just came out in the AP about the release of methane from Arctic regions as a contributor, and this is now a natural accelerating cycle, but where methane from permafrost frozen across Siberia, Canada, Alaska, and the northern regions of the world is being released, and it has the effect of 20 times what CO2 generates in terms of greenhouse gases. So there's big changes taking place here.
And we have, on top of that, other things that are solar, like the increase in solar max activity of the sun.
Right.
So we combine all of these effects, both the geotectonic events, where there's increasing volcanic activity and earthquakes, which increase the heating of the oceans off of the southern Pacific near South America. We have the geothermal effects that are increasing worldwide in the caldera in Montana. All of these things are feeding into a system that's revolutionarily changing the climates that are going to allow crops to grow, where it's fit for people to live, where animals would previously migrate and they are not able to because there's large population centers.
Right.
It's a very big problem.
You know, here in Alaska, you know, we see it. We've got deer in Anchorage area, which we never had except maybe 12,000 years ago during the last ice age. There was a time when there were deer between there and, say, 50,000 years ago. But we don't have them here, and now they're reappearing. We've got species of insects that are affecting our forest here, changing things pretty dramatically. But at the same time, you know, in terms of growing season, we've got another 2 or 3 weeks in Alaska we never had before. I'm growing apple trees in my yard here in Alaska, which I could never do as a kid. That was impossible. Like, the ground conditions and temperature conditions would not allow for it, and now they grow. You know, it's a big change to have witnessed happening.
Yeah, and this is actually occurring, if you want to call it, in terms of the Earth's age, at literally the speed of light. These things are happening so fast, it could literally turn a lot of the central United States, for example, into a very large Sahara-like desert.
Right. You know, you know, and what they're finding is that these things are accelerating. In other words, they're not like following some sort of gradual curve upwards. They're following a very sharp rise time, meaning that things are happening more and more quickly, and each of these things build on itself. Like, for instance, in the Arctic, we have, as I was saying, the methane expansion in terms of permafrost melting and the decay cycle and release of methane. What you also have is less white snow cover reflecting heat radiation from the Earth, and you have more dark ground cover absorbing radiation from the Earth. And so what you also see happening in the northern regions is the vegetation footprint is dramatically changing, where you've had aerial photographing over a 40-year period, four decades, where you can now look back and see what was versus what is, and it is dramatic. And that change, again, is one that's accelerating.
Yeah, exactly. And so why do people need to be concerned about this on a personal level, as things like, not only things like, or other things?
Well, I think it's important from this perspective is, you know, there's been a lot of argument in terms of how people politicize stewardship issues as it relates to the planet. And I think one side wants to make it, you know, sort of a squishy liberal issue. The other side wants to make it something else. But the reality is it's not a side or anything. It's a matter of recognition that the change is real. So as a country, I mean, as a people, we really need to start looking at What do we do because of that? I mean, no one's going to stop it, and everyone agrees on that. This is whether it's natural or man-made or who's responsible. You know, I think it's a case of man has the ability to throw additional straws on the camel's back, which we do regularly.
Exactly, like the HAARP project,
exactly.
Aggravating and or putting depleted uranium. And now we're discovering that CFCs are nowhere near as damaging as depleted uranium or the chemtrails, which are actually chemicals they're putting in the upper atmosphere that are very damaging to the ionosphere and the ion belt that protects us from cosmic and stellar and solar radiation.
Right. You know, the thing about a lot of this, you know, when you think about the effects globally, you know, when you start looking at nature's cycles and man-made's interaction with those cycles, we very well could bring down on ourselves some huge, huge problems. When you think about just the natural releases, which are pretty observable, and the lack of coordinated science, you know, I think that's one of the big missing links is there's a lot of disciplines that are observing different facets of the same elephant, you might say. You know, you can stand back and see it from different angles and you'll describe it much differently. But these disciplines need to get together and begin looking at the contribution of heat sources and all of these factors.
Exactly. In fact, they could do three-dimensional or four-dimensional modeling on supercomputers, and they need to start appropriating time for that.
Yeah.
But you're right, and that's why I bring on the program experts on solar science. I'm going to get Dr. McCanny on the program talking about solar science and how the solar system actually works. We're going to talk about, I'm an environmental physician, I'll get other experts talking about the effect of greenhouse gases and the normal convective currents that happen in the oceans, like the elevator that brings, I always did a marine oceanography research, that brings the warm oceanic currents that have a different salinity into the area of Europe toward Ireland and England. And we need to be aware that these things could abruptly stop. So in the process of warming, we could literally have in parts of, say, northern Europe, we could have a mini ice age there while we're literally baking over here.
That's right. And this is, you know, it's really more of climate change. I mean, the aggregate, yes, I think most researchers now agree it's warming, but that doesn't mean that it's warming everywhere. Exactly right. Is these engines of the seas, which literally drive the weather, drive the climate, here in Alaska, you know, the fact that we have a current that comes in from Japan and the Pacific actually keeps south central Alaska relatively warm in the winter and relatively cool in the summer, where as you get into the interior of the state, you get more extreme temperature variables. In the summer, you get into the 90s up there. We don't get that in this part of the state, at least not yet.
Right.
And so, you know, there's a lot of variables with these currents, but they contribute significantly to the distribution of weather, and that, of course, then affects agriculture and everything else on this planet.
And that, and see, I see this as a coming crisis in terms of food products. And if we don't respond and know what's going to happen and develop more effective growing methods and techniques,
right.
Now I'm not talking about genetically modified food,
right.
I'm talking about working with super soils like the Alaskan soils. In fact, I talked to one of my friends, is Bill Seidel in San Francisco, worked with a company out of Alaska that was going to try to take and try to reproduce the amazing culture of amazing soil organisms,
right.
Soil in Alaska, so you could grow food pretty well anywhere, enormous food.
Well, you know, Alaska has
soil itself is a living thing. It's an amazing thing in Alaska.
Yeah, you know, Alaska's got not just the microorganisms, but it's the other colloidal nutrients that are available. The area that is known in Alaska for its large vegetables, just north of me, about 40 miles, in the Matanuska Valley, you have the confluence of two huge glacial valleys. And the area where I'm standing, south of there, was covered by those glaciers at one point, with 4,000 feet of ice just less than 6,000 years ago. Now,
right.
When that receded, it left colloidal material, very fine particulate material, that was derived from the mountains in that region. Then we have volcanic chain that blows other types of minerals from deep within the earth into the same region. And the wind virtually blows there all the time. So you have this material also feeding through the leaves by the fact that when leaves are hit with dust over the course of the day, in the morning when dew forms on those leaves and songbirds chirp, the leaves actually have small pores that dilate to the tones of those birds.
Right.
And what happens is they absorb those colloidal minerals, so you get here in that particular spot these very unusual properties of excellent soils and microorganisms combined with all of the trace elements necessary to produce what literally are the world records in most vegetables that have ever been grown there.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why, of course, you have Dan Carlson's Sonic Bloom product,
right.
Because it's based on the sounds, which are like the chirping birds that work on the actual biology of the leaves, and the ionic minerals there. These are really interesting. If you look at the 17 of the longest-lived people on the Earth, they basically drink glacial milk or basically ionic minerals that come from glaciers.
Right, and if you look at the pH on that water, you know, it's almost perfectly balanced, and it
right.
contains all of these trace minerals in very usable forms. You know, when you get down to these nano-sized particles, you know, with a gram of material, you can cover a football field. You know, that's
right.
the kind of the way that stuff spreads out. It's so, so small.
Well, it has unusual names like erbidium, europium, indium. In fact, one of the products we have on my website is called Indiumese, because indium actually restores the function of your hypothalamus and your brain, and you'll even see reversal in many people of the hair color. But these special ionic minerals are extremely important, because every single enzyme pathway in your body requires a very special mineral, and they may be in a similar position in the periodic table of elements like calcium or magnesium, but they're in a different, heavier position, and they have a completely different biological effect on specific enzyme pathways. We really only understand about 3 to 4% of the pathways, say, in humans or other animals. And as a result, we need to investigate this more, because if we had ionic minerals feeding our crops, and if we gave the proper frequencies to generate tremendous food, and when Dan Carlson's actually using this to
yep.
take countries that are negative in terms of their food production into an exporting food production capacity. And
yep.
I really would like to see a return of the victory-type garden in everybody's home in America, using small pot-type gardens so they could do it on all seasons in there, in a sunroom, or hanging planters.
Right.
Things like hydroponics, using the Sonic Bloom and
right.
ionic minerals, because we need to start becoming independent of toxic, genetically modified food that has to be trucked thousands of miles. And, you know, this ties back in with, you know, when you have a truck that has to carry all these things thousands of miles and they're spewing pollution, what's the cost to the planet to pollute like that?
Yeah, you know, and it's the combination, certainly, of all these factors. And, you know, the sad story is technology, you know, when you start to think about the alternatives and what you could do with energy, for instance, you know, if you can get the energy cost as a cost of production down, which ought to be our national goal, you know, I mean,
right.
in terms of energy policy, that is in everyone's interest, and the alternatives
yeah.
present those opportunities. And if we invested in the infrastructure.
Well, the problem is we actually have these inventions. I was talking
yes.
to the Lone Lantern organization. Director, and he told me this last week on our radio show, that he has a video clip that he shows of this gentleman that actually discovered, I'm trying to remember his name right off the top, and more than a dozen years ago, he actually not only had demonstrated this, but actually eventually got the interest of the federal government, and after they had a national awards program for him, you know, he basically died next day of poisoning.
Yeah.
And he had developed an RF system that actually would lies the water molecules into hydrogen and oxygen, it would bubble off at enormous rates, and he drove his dune buggy in the early 90s all the way across America from the West Coast to Washington, D.C., and proved that he needed only 26 gallons of water.
Yeah.
And the byproduct was water vapor.
Water. Yeah.
Water vapor.
The beauty of all of this technology is that it's the suppression by corporate interests that has gotten in the way.
And governments, and governments that have intentions of evil, governments infiltrated
yep.
by juntas and cabals, and, you know, even within organizations that have lower people, let's say in the FBI, that want to do their job to stop people like Zacharias Moussaoui, who's obviously a Manchurian candidate, and he probably couldn't hijack a skateboard, let alone a plane. we have situations where we have interest in technology. Look at the Pierce Arrow car by Nikola
yep.
Tesla, that back, I think, in 1932, he drove it around like 10 hours with nothing. He had a box of the old-style radio tubes and some different rods of different lengths for tuning it to the cosmos, to the harmonic frequencies, and he was able to transmute the energy through his Pierce Arrow car, drive it around at 60 miles an hour all day for 10 hours on nothing but ether energy.
Well, and when you think about food production, really with changing climate and changing environment, you know, energy is going to be a big part of that. It already is. I mean, when you think about food costs this fall, it's going to be the energy component that drives it up. So if you could drive this the other direction. So refrigeration was relatively cheap, so energy for cooling and heating your homes is relatively cheap, and transporting goods, everything and everyone benefits by that. The problem is, as you say, it's those rooted corporate interests that have way too much to lose that have worked against it. You know, here in Alaska, they're right now they're debating in special session energy policy that's going to affect the taxing structure for the state forever, and granting the industry potentially huge concessions in terms of risk taking. When who are they to need any concessions right now? I mean, the
right.
industry is doing fine, way too fine when you consider the expense on the American public and on our economy, quite frankly.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. And in fact, we're at the point now, though, where we can't permit corporations to do this any further.
That's right.
We're now reaching a point, and this is interesting. Sidney Williams is an expert on the oil crisis. And there's no shortage of oil, but the problem is that the pollution that's generated from using it as a primary energy source is destroying our environment.
Right.
But there's no shortage of oil, so that's not the issue. The issue is that the price of diesel fuel is going up through the ceiling, so that farmers literally, and he said that he had a meeting here just a few months ago, Western Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas, and the panhandle of Texas, and what he found was that the farmers are basically every day there's farmers killing themselves because they can't keep the family farm. They've got these huge farms, they can't afford to plant a crop.
Yep.
Or they're right at the edge, so they say, well, we're planting crops this year, the last ones that haven't done that, but next year, if it goes up, we're not planting. So we're a year and a half away from a famine. We are actually, without even any climate change, which is coming quickly, we have an energy crisis,
right.
And the entrenched power brokers that control the White House and control other countries, like the British government and the Canadian government, are not responding to this.
That's right.
My father had a friend who actually bought a car every 2 years from the Ford factory, one of the old T-Birds, and in 1975 he got one and it had an unusual, carburation system under the hood. He didn't know until after he drove around for a few days, and he said, gee, the gas needle's not dropping. Damn it, I bought this thing, paid cash. Went and opened it up, and looked at it, hey, there was this weird experimental carburation system. This is before electronic carburation and fuel injection. And he was getting 75 miles per gallon on
wow.
the highway and 55 in the city. And this is a very big car, over 6,500 pounds. So we have a very, very evil corporation. You can't call it stupid. You've got to call it evil. This is evil and diabolical we have these things happening.
It's the misuse of technology. You know, there are some technologies that we should be maybe approaching even a little bit differently in terms of how we allow them to be developed. I mean, in terms of alternate energy,
right?
You know, maybe there's, when you discover these kinds of things, maybe those kinds of discoveries ought to be more fully funded by government, but more importantly, they ought to be made available to the general public in a much different way. In other words, if somebody develops intellectual property and that will solve the energy crisis,
right.
there should be serious criminal prosecution for those that would suppress it. And there
exactly.
should be
or they misuse
awards.
The patent process to actually
That's
buy
right.
the patents and suppress it.
That's right.
And pay off the researchers so that it doesn't become available to the public. There almost has to be an oversight agency to say, this patent, for example, it has national or global interest.
Exactly.
The agency sees every patent, not only current but past, and goes through them and says, look, my gosh, we've got a solution for this and for this and for this.
Exactly.
I mean, for all these. I'll give you an example, a concrete one. Back in 1973, I was doing my research project. I was assigned by my professor, Dr. Robert Brown. I was an honors biochemistry bacteriology. He said, well, I want you to see if you can go and find a bacteria that can actually convert seaweed into edible food for animals. Well, I actually succeeded. In 5 months, I actually went out in the ocean, snorkeled, got the bacteria on the Congress crispus, actually created an artificial polysaccharide with 3-O-methyl radioisotopes, supercultured until I got a concentration of the natural bacteria, and that was genetic alteration that was already out there.
Yep.
It had 10 to 100 million times more enzyme capacity than the normal average bacteria. Was able to take as much as like a pound of this seaweed, grow it at our seaweed research station into 100 pounds in 1 week. That's how
wow.
long it took, was just salt water, wind, and air.
Wow.
And you could throw the bacteria in the vat, and it would convert it to food in about 3 to 4 days, dry it out, and it was higher protein and ionic mineral content. And this is the reason why the Scottish sheep, which were genetically identical to the British and the Welsh, were three times bigger and had better wool, which is why the Scots would never tell the Brits or the Welsh why their wool was so good, because, of course, they had a big sweater industry in Scotland.
Right.
And they went down and would eat the dulse, and they would get the bacteria that were naturally growing on the dulse and on the seaweeds. But I found a superculture that was 100 million times stronger using radioisotope tracer tests.
Wow.
And I asked them if they could let me use this even afterward, because I was getting into medical school rather than going on and just writing up and finishing my PhD project, which I completed in less than 6 months. And they said, no, the government has this. And they just stuck it away. And that's me. I came up with that solution, and I solved that problem, which would have supplied enough food for all the animals in the world 33 years ago, and they suppressed it, and they threatened me that if I tried to do it, they would sue me.
Well, you know, now it's probably, long since outdated in terms of a prior right. 25 years is the international, patents, and 17
right.
for domestic, and, who knows? But this is, again, where the peoples of the country really need to recognize that sometimes we need to rethink it. Like this kind of a solution, there should be national prizes that provide serious cash compensation for inventors. I mean, inventors certainly deserve to be rewarded. There ought to be some royalty attached to whatever comes of those inventions, but there should be no restriction on production so that 100 companies can take advantage of that knowledge, produce that alternative carburetor or whatever else, the food technology or any other technology.
Yeah, right now what they do is they use it as a means for one company, and if that one company fails, that technology dies too.
Yeah, or it gets hung up forever in our arguments about who did what first, and there's a way to sort that out, make it extremely valuable. I mean, if somebody solved the energy problem, and I believe those solutions are on the planet today.
Oh, they already have them.
And it's only a case of recognition. And we could spend a hell of a lot less solving that problem than rebuilding the infrastructure of Iraq. And
absolutely.
And we
well, this is a fact, and people should take notice of this, that only 4% of science is public, meaning up to the PhD level, only 4% of all the research done in the modern era has actually been published. It's all classified.
And
in
it's getting more so, even.
Right.
When you think about
so what we have is a solution literally to every technical, enzymatic, food, and other problem.
Yes.
A lot of the time, they're directly developed for military or space applications, but it's all classified, so it's not available to the public to solve problems like cancer, heart disease, growing crops, doing anything. Climate modification, like there was no need for Katrina to strike the Gulf states. That was completely avoidable, and they could have done that back 35 years ago, and there's experts that have been on shows like Alex Jones that basically were able to create storms over Vietnam to create, monsoons and floods so that they would interfere with the so-called underground highway of transportation of materials through Vietnam.
Right.
That's back in the 70s and 60s. I mean, let's face it. We have a very, very diabolically evil governments and above-government agencies and corporations that now literally run it, and 45% of the largest economies on Earth are not nations now, they're corporations.
Yep, and these are, when you think about a corporate structure, once the founder's gone, it doesn't have the character of a human being anymore. It has the character of a machine, because
a psychopathic killer is what it is.
Yeah,
it's actually a psychological profile. It is the profile of a psychopathic serial killer.
Yeah, I mean, it has to. It survives on the worst and lowest of emotions. I mean, there's a type of capitalism that has to have responsibility attached to it, and that's what I think we've lost and maybe never had in some forms. Some people never got it, and that's where the evil comes in, because it's just like technology. It's a great tool for running an economy if you apply the idea that you can't hurt people in the course of it. I mean, and that's...
Well, exactly. We see that now with medicine. And the latest twist, and I've mentioned this on the program before, is that I close up my practice to work on these major environmental, political, and geopolitical issues such as 9/11 and the world pollution and ELF technology and all these things, mind control, the world ID that's coming quickly 2 years ago. But since I closed it, I found out, because I still belong to boards and so on, they're now doing it in a number of states, and they want to have it go national, that doctors are going to be monitored by insurance carriers, that they have to report on their patients that if they won't follow treatment protocols, like take flu vaccines that are laced with mercury, take Ritalin or Strattera for attention deficit disorders, that the doctor will be profiled because he doesn't report his people or he doesn't make his people follow the protocols, therefore he will be charged with substandard medical care and his license will be revoked.
Yeah.
This is already now operationally in the works.
Yeah, and this
so the insurance carriers have managed to do this with the regulatory authorities. And, of course, the big drug companies are all just salivating now that they passed this new law where they have mandatory psychological testing of all children in America every 6 months. And, of course, the American Psychiatric Association, Pediatric Psychiatric Association, has said 20% of all children in America need to be on neuropharmaceuticals, none of which, by the way, have ever been tested on children. Many have been proved to be lethal, cause Parkinson's disease, motor disorders, tics, suicide, and homicide. And yet, they continue to push them. My profession is so unethical, they make the New World Order and the Illuminati look like little puppies.
Yeah, you know, this, really, again, you get right back to, there's a great book, it's not published in this country, it was published in Great Britain called Dirty Medicine, which was a 900-page expose on the pharmaceutical industry. And, you know, the guy, of course, couldn't get anyone to publish it. It was an alternative medical practitioner that got it published and kept it in print over there. But one thing about all of this, it gets right back to that same issue. You've got organizations that are driven by Wall Street instead of Main Street kind of values, and that's what you get in a corporate structure because it doesn't have a soul. It doesn't have a consciousness.
Well, that, and I like your book that you say, the book that you talked about, these technologies of the 21st century, the death give us the full title again, and it talks about the soul in that title.
It is. It's the betrayal of science, society, and the soul is the subtitle, and it
really
is about that because ultimately the creative capacity of human beings, in my view, is actually what makes us really in the image of the Creator himself. You know, he gave us these capabilities, creative capabilities to use properly. And when we mix them with the wrong intentions, evil results.
Exactly. That's why it says that we are made in the image of the Creator. Our destiny is actually to cross across the galaxies and the cosmos and to be, if you want to call it, the children of the living God, the rulers of this universe under the authority of the Creator or the Most High God. And to be, if you want to call it, a cosmic man. Instead, what we've decayed to now is I see the society more dumbed down, laced with fluoride, given mercury vaccines, toxic with many pills. I mean, I was teasing one gentleman a few, 3 years ago, and he walked in, and you could see him kind of walking with a bit of a stuttering gait. And I said, I know why you walk like that. He said, you're taking at least 9 to 12 medications. So his daughter walks in with a big shopping bag full of pills and stacks them up on the counter. I said, you know, I think I could hear the pills clicking together as you're walking.
My goodness.
And I said, you know what? I'm going to continue taking pills away from your father until finally he can recognize me from visit to visit.
Yeah.
And this is the evil of what's going on now.
Yeah.
And look, we have companies like Crestor. They, even the companies, when they have a twinge of guilt, like Crestor went to the Fatal Drugs Allowed organization, or I call it the Federal Demonic Agency.
Okay.
And the Fatal Drugs Allowed agency actually decided that, no, Crestor, you cannot add CoQ10 because we know you're causing congestive heart failure because you caused their cardiomyocytes, their heart muscle cells, to die. But there's no way we're going to let you put coenzyme Q10 to stop people from croaking with your cholesterol-lowering agent. So Crestor has a large brewing lawsuit against it, but doctors are still giving it. And after, of course, became evident that Vioxx, Celebrex, and Baxter was killing an extra at least 500,000 Americans during the time between when they knew that they were causing excessive cardiac deaths with stroke and heart attack, and they didn't warn people or doctors, they hid the data.
Yeah, this happened. I mean, the biggest scandal, you know, people should learn from it, was the tobacco industry. You know, again, you know, it's kind of common sense nowadays, but it wasn't back when those studies were originally done and suppressed. And, you know, the thing that, you know, amazes me is over time, there's very little accountability for any of this. You know, it's not the guy robbing the 7-Eleven on the corner. It's the guy carting off the public health for greed, essentially. And, you know,
they don't cart off like $10 or $20 or $1,000 when they rob a store. They're robbing, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars, you know.
And they're taking
the health industry in America is 25% of the world economy now is what I call the death cult.
Yeah.
The death cult, which is the cult of death medicine. Unnecessary, let's say, surgery like spinoplasties, unnecessary medical procedures, unnecessary and toxic medications, which don't fix the problem, but poison enzyme pathways, and they change the death certificate, the date, and the cause of death, but they don't help in improving people's health.
No, I mean, when you look at the United States in terms of what we spend on health care, we spend more than any industrialized country, and the only industrialized country that's lower than us on infant mortality is Lithuania. That's according to the latest studies coming out on infant mortality. We spend more on it and get less for it, and we really need to question what's happening within the industry, and it's the alternatives where the hope lies. In fact, 40%, last statistics I read, of medical dollars are spent by individuals on non-covered alternative therapies. And, the industry has then come in and tried to regulate, like they have successfully in Europe, dietary supplements, vitamins, anything in that alternative area, really denying people at the same time access to, decent and affordable natural health care solutions. And there's
we've had Dr. Rima Lebeau on my program in the Nutramedical Report on, and, of course, I'm soon going to have Clay and Iron for archives for my own personal archives for Clay and Iron for the show, and also many other articles on that site. But Nutramedical, you can go to the Nutramedical Report and look at the archives of the show from last week with Dr. Rima Lebeau. And as much as you always think that you can't be shocked every day, I'm shocked by some fact or group of facts that's shocking. And the latest shock that I got from Dr. Lebeau last week when I interviewed her was that she said that the regulations read that the way the World Trade Organization and the Codex Alimentarius, which is set up to actually strip the world from all nutraceuticals and enzymes and so on, is that if a nutrient like vitamin C is considered, even if it's positive, it will be by regulation called a toxin, even if it has a positive effect on your health. And as a toxin, it will therefore be considered a poison and must be removed from the access, and it's not even going to be available by prescription.
Yeah.
So don't assume that these things are going to be available by prescription to go to your doctor. No. Only pharmaceuticals will be available, which are, of course, not part of this. Nutraceuticals, if they might reduce your cholesterol or reduce your heart risk, like natokinase, which we call N-kinase. I had Dr. Holsworth on today from DO talking about this. Brought it over from Dr. Sumi in Japan. No. These things will be unavailable. We will be living in a very sorry state, drinking water laced with hydrofluorosilicates that fry our brain and neurons, taking vaccine-laced vaccines, taking vaccines that they now are testing on DPS children in Britain and CPS in America against so-called narcotic molecules like cocaine and other things. But, by the way, they rewire your nerve pathways in your brain. And eating genetically modified frankenfoods, taking our full spectrum of toxic drugs under aegis of our doctors, who are now in the total matrix that if they don't behave, their license and their livelihood will be revoked from them because they're misbehaving. They have to give the requisite poison to their minions of the controlled and caged citizens of America and every other Western nation.
Well, here in Alaska, there was a recent report, and it's probably very indicative of a lot of places. $1 in $8 is spent on medical-related expenses here. That's, think about that in terms of the economy. And when you look at the economy of the United States, think how much of the economy runs on medical care and energy, just those two components. And these are why the institutions that surround them are such powerful lobby efforts in Washington. I mean, you got the richest companies, the pharmaceuticals, and really their agents, the medical profession, because ultimately, the mavericks don't last.
They don't. They get drummed out. I can just go over a couple of details of my own personal situation. Back in the spring of 2000, I was asked by a legal firm to do an independent medical exam on a gentleman who was paralyzed by a spinoplasty procedure done in Broomfield, Colorado. They had trouble getting a doctor to do it because, of course, the poor patient, this Hispanic gentleman, was a diabetic. He became paralyzed from the procedure and could walk only 68 feet with Canadian crutches, and then he would collapse.
Yeah.
So we had a very untoward effect from the surgery. So when I did the report, I found not only no indication for the procedure, but also possibly retained a needle-like metallic body in the L4-5 area of the spine. Well, a month and a half later, I got a call from the spine surgeon that did this that was very irate and said he knew the president and the secretary of the Board of Medical Examiners, and he was going to get my license pulled. And so the following year, when I had one of my patients who I was preparing for surgery, just getting her all prepped up for her spine at an orthopedic surgeon, she promptly has a stroke. And, of course, she had had previous deep vein thrombosis. The board tried to pull my license, saying that it was a medication that was in her that caused it. And, of course, there was no medication because I had the toxicology, and I was trained as a toxicologist, too. And I said, so walk into the meeting, and they're trying to pull my license, saying, well, you know, your medication killed this woman because it's pain med. And there was none in the system. Zero. Nada. But that didn't matter. I mean, no. This is how evil our profession is. And that's just, the, you know, there's more to the story, but that gives you an example of just how horrendous it is. It is so corrupt. It is so evil. And the state of Colorado is replicated in the state of Tennessee and the state of Florida and California with Dr. Frank Fisher. And now there's less than 6,000 pain doctors willing to give high-dose narcotic medications to people dying of terminal cancer or serious non-cancer pain, compared to 40,000, according to Purdue Pharma and the head chief counsel, legal counsel for Purdue Pharma that makes OxyContin. And we do have the magic bullet. It's not toxic. It's not like methadone that was developed by the Nazis because we had cut off their supply of poppies so the German soldiers were dying in agony. Their own chemists came up with methadone. Methadone has horrible side effects at higher doses, but OxyContin doesn't. So does fentanyl or Actique. And the problem is, instead of trying to find other technology, so eventually you don't need these narcotics. What they do is they're pursuing doctors with great vengeance. Doctors are spending the rest of their lives, and thank God none of my patients died with high-dose narcotics in them, because I can tell you I would be spending the rest of my days cooling my heels in a federal penitentiary in Colorado like Canyon City. These are very evil times. We have medicine out of control, politicians out of control, corporations out of control, the environment dying. The earth is in a state of full-fledged, convulsive, full-code blue arrest. That's the state of the world right now. And if people don't grasp it, this is not a rehearsal. This is the death of the earth. And guess what? We are earth people. And as the earth dies, we are, in the words of George Carlin, someday the earth is going to be like a dog, and we're like the fleas. It's going to just shake us off.
Well, you know, there's a there's actually a verse about this. It's Revelations 11:18, and it basically ends.
My favorite verse.
You know, God destroys those that destroy the earth, and
I shall return to destroy those that destroy the earth.
And you know, that's a powerful statement for believers, and it gets back to this idea of responsibility. You know, it's really about that, and we have a government that's not accountable to the people, that create a transparent population. They can't even keep confidential VA records hidden if people follow today's news reports.
Right.
The reality is we have a government that is becoming difficult to look into if you can look into it at all.
You can't, and there's not even a whistleblower protection in the law for members of the Homeland Security Department, and they're stripping it away from various members of the FBI, CIA, and other agencies that at the top are extremely corrupt, but the lower agents are trying to do their job.
That's right.
And when they try to do their job and they find things that are wrong, they're promptly told by the higher-ups, if you do continue to become a problem by bringing up issues, even if they're serious and affect national security, you're an issue and you'll never advance.
These happen in almost every agency of government. There are very good people trying to make a difference, and often, more often than not, the incompetence that rises to the top.
The scum rises to the top.
Yeah, and you're dealing with people that are very, dependent on their jobs like everybody is, so you can't blame the little guy in the agency. But the agencies need greater institutions of accountability. And this is where, you know, you've got an ethics committee in the Congress that haven't met for a year while two people have been indicted, their office is searched by the FBI. I mean, come on. Where does the accountability end and begin? Here in our state, the legislature actually proposed to keep ethics complaints confidential until they were dispositioned. You know, we don't do that in criminal cases. We sure as heck shouldn't be doing that in review of our accountability of public servants. That ought to be an open process, and it ought to be real open in the light of day. I mean, not hidden in some closet.
Well, the problem is, this deals with the issue of administrative law of physicians.
Right.
I mean, they've tried more than once to try to come after me because I was considered a patient advocate. I was told when I was investigating why we had so many of our Gulf War I vets coming back and getting disabled, getting polyneuropathies, transverse myelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, organic dementia, suicide, my gosh, we got super physical specimens, guys that literally could jump out of a helicopter upside down with a night vision scope and a 90-pound backpack, and these guys can't walk to the bathroom now unaided going down the hall.
Right. That's
and what's happening is I was told specifically, do not order advanced immunological or heavy metal tests or you will get fired or worse. I said, what's worse? He said, how about that? I said, you do not threaten me.
Yeah.
You might threaten somebody else. You will not threaten Deco.
Nope. And, you know,
and I looked at him, and he was Major George Swinner, and I said, you know, you better take me seriously, fella. You know, this is the way that they run things now. This is at CECOM in Colorado Springs, and this is the kind of evil that's permitted in our military and our government. And, again, when you reach the point of corruption, the house of cards will fall.
Yes. It always does, you know, and that's I think in all of this, you know, as things accelerate, and even the mainstream can't hide from a lot of it now.
Well, we see the ultimate fall house of cards. I can hear the falling sound starting. Number one, we have all these countries had a major correction on Monday in the stock market. That's because everybody is shuddering that they're fleeing from the American dollar, and when they started the fleeing process, the stock market started to crash, and everybody's economy started to go down. Everyone on the planet. Then they realize, O-S-H-I, we can't do that. Because if we pull out from the American dollar, guess what? All our assets, all our stock markets go goodbye.
Yep.
So we have an interlocking, what I call, death grip with debt. All these nations that have loaned us, and if they stop loaning us, guess what? Their economy goes bye-bye, too. It's a very, very serious Ponzi game that's very dangerous.
Yeah, and it's, you know, what's backed up on it at this point is you've got not just that store of dollars, but think about our traditional ideological adversaries like China. If they just come in and dump those dollars, you know, we're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, so are they, but the thing is, they'll probably survive because they'll go back to being a third world nation, but they'll have some more technology because we gave it to them, and
they'll
have some economy, but they'll do it internally.
But
guess what? We will crash because even what we fill in our stores, like for Christmas decorations and all I call China Mart and all the other baubles that have been shipped to all these other countries now, we will dry up because we've shipped out our and exported our industrial and our manufacturing base.
Right. You know what's happened in China in the more recent reports is they're even having labor shortages where they'd advertise for 6 jobs and have 100 applicants. They're lucky to get one. And so now you've got an economy that is so heated up, you know, it's tripling our growth in terms of heated up, but you're also seeing now a shift into other third world countries to exploit labor in a cheaper and cheaper way. Well, you know, this works against us because now you got China exporting that technology in addition to us. And, you know, when you start looking at
it becomes a platform to export it to other countries and to export the slave culture.
That's exactly right. And, you know, when you fall, if you don't, you know, it's like a little two-year-old. When it falls, it doesn't get very, doesn't get hurt usually because it only has
okay, we're coming
to
the end.
Yep.
But it's the rest of the world that has a lot to lose.
Absolutely. And on that note, Dr. Nick Begich, we will definitely have to have you back on the program. You can visit NutraMedical.com and obtain all these amazing DVDs and so on. The Angels Still Don't Play That Harp, and, of course, the latest DVD, Two Earth Changes, The Ripple Effect, Alaska Sounds the Alarm, and many other books, tapes, and also some technologies for, you know, what I call rational and logical mind enhancement, learning technologies to avoid the use of these toxic drugs. Thank you very much, Dr. Nick, and thank you, Don and Doug, over at BBS Radio, and I will be back tomorrow night with another amazing guest. Stay tuned. We're going to have a new change, though. We're going to have Frosty Woolridge talking about the illegal immigration and the crisis in America. Thank you, everyone, and take care, and thank you, Dr. Nick. You're a hero in my books, and everyone, check it out, take action. There are no silent heroes.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.